I'm Bay, and you're listening to Bay Baltimore, a weekly pop culture and society podcast recorded in a quiet neighborhood in Baltimore. This episode, I watched Netflix's Day Shift starring Jamie Foxx, Megan Good, and that one man, plus Snoop Dogg was in it. Anyway, I'm gonna talk about it. It was interesting. I'm gonna talk about it. Plus, it's like trending right now on Netflix. So a lot of people are watching it, and I bet you I know why. But anyway, so I'll talk about that in a little bit. But first, the day before this recording is my 9th wedding anniversary with my boo. I don't know, man. This wedding anniversary has been... This doesn't feel surreal. It just feels like we're on the cusp of some pretty awesome stuff. I've shared that we're on a fertility journey and we're still on it. Still on the journey. It's been a long one, but we're on it. But longer than I expected. But we're still on it. And pretty excited about what's to come. And also, hubby is at a really great place where he's got some decisions to make on branching out on his own. And it's a scary place for him to be, because he's never done this before. You know what I mean? He never thought about, not even that he's not done it before, but he's not thought about branching out on his own and doing his own thing, starting his own business. But, you know, one of my siblings, that's one of the things that he does most. He helps people start their own businesses. And my siblings, actually, boy, I had a wild weekend. So my siblings who I haven't really hung out with altogether ever, because my family is blended and there's such an age gap and just distance and hurt and things like that, which, you know, that can happen in families. But anyway, so this was our first time hanging out. They came here to Baltimore, and I did my level best to show them a good time. And I thank God my hubby was there to help show them a really good time. They had a blast. I kept them hydrated. I kept them hydrated, and we had so much fun. I don't think I've had that much fun in a long time. And so we had some great conversations, some difficult conversations, but we had them while we were having fun. And so we had that. The day before the release day was wedding anniversary. So hubby and I are celebrating this, and life is good. I'm pretty happy. I know that I'm just pretty happy I got accepted into a fellowship program, which I'm pretty excited about, because I applied for it on a whim, but it fit. It was right up my alley. And the way I believe, the way my faith works, if it is meant for you to do this thing, the getting to it is easy. Now, the execution of it is it can be difficult, because, you know, you might be using skills you've not ever used before, and all of that stuff. You might be approaching situations or confronted with situations you never dealt with before. And so navigating that might be difficult, but the getting to it, that part is ice cream. It's too easy. You don't have to work super hard to get access to that thing. Managing it, maintaining it is another story, but getting access to it is ice cream. If that's what is in your path, if you're walking in your steps, I'm using Christian language, but many of you, I'm sure, are familiar, even if you are not a practicing, or even if you don't identify as being Christian, you can appreciate how, there are a lot of different religions. If you are religious but not Christian, there's a lot of overlap in terms of, you know, how we think of gifts and opportunities. That's pretty universal. And so when a thing is meant for you to enjoy, when a thing is meant for you to cultivate and develop, the getting to you is pretty simple. It's easier than most things. It's just the work is difficult. So anyway, I'm feeling pretty good. Feeling pretty good about the future. So, yeah, I just wanted to say that, and congratulations to anyone else who's, for all you people, all you parents preparing to send your kids back to school, all you college students who are preparing to go maybe for the first time, or, second year. Or this is not new to you. You've been doing this, but you're preparing to go, you know, bless you on your journey. I still remember the excitement. I still remember the excitement of my first year in college. Because I was already there over the summer. I was with the Carver program, John Washington Carver program. And so I was with a bunch of kids of color, just getting a head start, which I thought was pretty, looking back on it, that's pretty awesome program to be a part of, because it exposed me to so many different things. And I really do believe that it set me on the path that I'm on today. So I remember being so excited about that. And then I remember the excitement was a little waned just a little bit. Well, it just turned into something new. Sophomore year, junior year, senior year, the excitement was different. It wasn't that possibilities are endless excitement anymore. By my senior year, it was more like, all right, let me get through this because I've got a life to plan. I've got a life to get to living. And I want to get out of here. So anyway, so good luck to y'all on y'all year. And all you elementary school, well, I shouldn't nobody be an elementary school student, but there are definitely high schoolers that are listening to this, whether you're a freshman, whether you're a senior, you're a freshman, just keep your head down, get you some extracurricular activities. You know, you got to get your volunteer hours. Just put your head down and get through it. It's high school. You will have a lot of fun in high school, but that's not where your living ends. You've got a whole lot more after that. Whatever your path is, it's your journey. Walk it. Be grateful for your journey, even if you didn't have grateful moments on it. They're all teachable moments on that journey. I don't know why I'm sitting up here advice giving. But anyway, just enjoy it. Take every moment and enjoy it, because nothing is promised, my dear. Not a single thing. Anyway, now that I'm off that, I'm feeling optimistic. I'm feeling very warm blankety right now when you need it most. You know what I mean? Anyway, but let me move on. Before I get to talking about the day shift. Anyway, before I get to talking about that Jamie Foxx movie, can we just talk about that last episode just real briefly on Rap Shit? Can we just do that really quickly? Because I don't know, so much to unpack in that episode. So Mia and, oh girl, I didn't forget. Hold on, let me pull it up, because now I'm forgetting. Rap Shit. Okay. Who are the... It go Mia and... Come on with the cast. Mia and Shauna. Okay. So Mia and Shauna go to New York for an opportunity. And I'm gonna be honest with you, I was halfway distracted in this episode. So I know I missed some bits and pieces. But what I know is they end up going to New York. Shauna wants to go see her boyfriend. Shauna's going up there to see her boyfriend because she hasn't seen him in a minute. They're doing that long distance thing. And Mia has a client. What we saw, I think, was it the first episode or the second? We know that Mia has a sugar daddy or a client. I don't know. Would you call him a client? Probably. Anyway, a sugar daddy or somebody who's interested in a rich white man who's interested in giving her money to be in the pleasure of her company, for the pleasure of being in her company. Anyway, so she going up there to see him, and Shauna is going up there to see her boyfriend, and they get off the plane, and immediately Shauna's first reaction is, oh, excuse me, well, let's get on a train and blah, blah, blah. She's trying to navigate the subway system. And Mia's like, no, because her man or her gentleman caller has a car service waiting for them. Lap of luxury. So immediately, so they get together, and this is the last time that they're together before it makes it seem like maybe this is a Friday and this is the last time they're together until like mid Saturday or something like that. Anyway, so Shauna gets dropped off at her boyfriend's house or a boyfriend's apartment with her roommates, and Kid Fury is back in this episode. And he's funny. He is so funny. He is so funny. I pray that he's doing all right. I saw a tweet that he had posted showing proof of him getting his life. Because, you know, everybody was a little bit, that ending of that last show that they did was pretty, to me, it was pretty unnerving. Because it was clear that he really needed a moment to focus on his own wellness. Because it was serious for him. And so who knows if the show is coming back, but he's feeling pretty good. So, or he's getting back to himself. But anyway, it was good to see him in this episode. And so anyway, so we're introduced to him, same old, same old. And so Shauna's going and she's hanging out with Boo. And we see Mia in the lap of luxury getting treated to lavish dinners, just lavishness. But we never see the guy. We only see his hand, this white man's hand. We never see him. But we see her looking beautiful and being spoiled and all of that stuff. Anyway, and what we know is that she's put up in something like a penthouse hotel or something like that for the weekend. And so anyway, so she's living it up in the lap of luxury. And Sean is over there in an apartment with her boyfriend who shares a room with, you know, two other roommates, because it is expensive living in any urban city, especially one of the larger urban cities in the United States, without roommates, unless you're rich. You just have to have a roommate. Shoot, you barely can even stay in Baltimore. Any urban city, it's hard for you to stay in a decent apartment or condo without a roommate, because it's expensive. Now, mind you, it's not New York expensive, but it's still expensive. Anyway, so long story short, in the episode, they get invited to this Spotify party because they're an up-and-coming rap group. And one of their friends from college is obviously exploiting this opportunity because she's on to come up for her career too. So anyway, so they go to the Spotify party and it goes left. It slowly goes left. So first off, Shauna's boyfriend, what's that man's name? Is it Cliff? Cliff, yeah. So Shauna's boyfriend, Cliff, he's already feeling a way because he really does not, he is not supportive of her rap career. Or at the very least, he's supportive of her, of Shauna being a rapper, but he's not supportive of her being this type of rapper. He doesn't approve of their image. He feels like, and this is the classism totally, and it's coming to a head. I imagine we'll get more in the next episode and you'll know why in a second. But like, he is a little bit classist. And Shauna's got a little bit of a chip on her shoulder, to be honest with you, that she needs to address too about classism. We already saw that Mia and Shauna had a moment where Shauna needed to realize that she needed to check her classism, right? So that they could move forward as a duo. And so they got over that, and now they're hustling on their grind, trying to move their music. And so obviously the Spotify opportunity is huge because, you know, if it can get picked up by a Spotify list, then playlist, then who knows? It'll be in untold number of people's podcasts. You know what I mean? Untold number of people will be listening to it, which would then probably put them in the face of record producers and things like that. So anyway, nobody says record producers anymore. They just say producers. Anyhow, and labels. So anyhow, so they go to the Spotify party, but Shauna and Cliff are showing signs of strain because Cliff wants him all to herself, or at least to spend more time, because again, time together just alone, because again, they're living in a long distance relationship. Not only that, Cliff is currently still in law school. Shauna, they need to spend more time together. Shauna's got a job, Shauna's working, and now she's growing her rap career. This is putting more strain on their relationship. And so it is shown in Cliff's voice, or it's written all over Cliff when they go to the Spotify party and Cliff is used as the camera person for them. They need somebody to take shots of Shauna and Mia. And Cliff does not like this role. Like, he's acting like he's trying to be supportive, but he's not supportive at all. He's just kind of doing it because he doesn't want to seem like a jerk, but he really doesn't want to be around here being the cameraman. And so blah, blah, blue. There's a moment where they get him a press pass and he's able to hang out with the two of them and he's doing okay. But then there's this opportunity where they need to go to this other part of the party that is where the artists are, where they can get in front of other, some really important, influential people. And Shauna and Mia are able to go because they have this special lanyard or this special wristband as artists. However, Cliff is unable to go through because he literally just has a press pass. So Shauna, in her infinite wisdom, leaves him at the bar as if... See, I blame Shauna too, but she leaves him at the bar as if he's not currently sulking. And if you know your partner, I don't care if you're in a long distance relationship, you know those clues, those body language clues, the sucking of the teeth, the gentle head nod, the turn of the head, the roll of the eyes. You know certain combinations of impersonal, not impersonal, what am I trying to say? Interpersonal communication, nonverbal communication that indicates when your partner is frustrated, right? You know the signs before they even say a word. You know the signs, and she was not paying attention to the signs. She was being very unattentive. So you got Cliff being a brat because that's what he was being. He was not being very supportive. He was not being a good sport. And you got Shauna being completely oblivious and totally unattentive completely unattentive, right? And so she leaves, and of course, Cliff is like, okay, bet, forget this. So he gets drunk. And then he leaves. Meanwhile, but Shauna and Mia, Shauna doesn't know he's left yet. Shauna is up there with Mia and they are twisted. Mia is more so twisted. And so they go and they're at this Spotify party and some woman bumps Mia and they get into a tussle and it gets out of hand a little bit. And so they go ahead and they getting ready to leave that section. They've missed the opportunity to engage with the very important person that they wanted to see. And they're about to head out and they're about to go scoop up Cliff to head out. But Cliff is nowhere to be seen. Cliff is gone. And so they part ways. No, they don't part ways. I'm sorry. This party happens after something happens to Mia. So remember I told you that Mia was in the lap of luxury being flued out by her gentleman caller. There is a moment where they're about to prepare. This is what's happening. They're preparing for the Spotify party. And she's just cool and relaxed. And she's about to meet up with Mia or with Shauna later. Mia is in the tub and she's like going on live or something like that. Because again, this is smarter that show to really portray the lives of young people the way it is. And a lot of people go on live, especially when they're doing lavish things. Artists these days, no matter their age, they go on live on TikTok because that's what it is. TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, whatever, mostly Instagram and TikTok. But anyway, she's on live and whatever. So we're seeing her in this bubble bath, hearing just living lavishly. And then we hear the sound of the door opening in this apartment that she was not expecting anyone to be coming in. And so she freaks out. And so here's where I feel like I missed something. Something happens to Mia that was so unnerving to her. She literally packs up all of her stuff, leaves that hotel and immediately calls Shauna to come get her. And I feel like I missed it. And if you didn't miss it, please let me know. Send me a voice message to let me know because I missed it. And I guess I need to watch the thing again. But something happens to her, and you get the sense that Mia's no shrinking violet, right? She's no punk. So something truly unnerving happened to her, and she's ready to go. So Shauna gets her. I think she takes a cab or something to the address where Shauna's boyfriend and their roommates live. And she's going to crash there. But they end up going to the Spotify party. And again, this is Shauna not truly being attentive. So she's not being attentive to Cliff. She doesn't recognize that Cliff is not in a good place right now, and they need to talk. She also doesn't recognize, she understands that Mia is uncomfortable right now. She's frustrated, but she does not dig into the why. And so she ends up taking these two people who are dejected for different reasons to the Spotify party. Now, mind you, Mia will not go back to that penthouse that she was staying in. And so she needs a place to crash for the rest of the weekend. It's Saturday night at this point. So Cliff is completely unhappy about that, because not only does he gets even less personal time or one-to-one time with Shauna. And again, Shauna is not picking up the pieces. She's not putting the two and two together. Her friend abruptly out of nowhere has to come and stay with her. Needs a place to stay. Again, not interrogating the why for real behind it. Doesn't even recognize that Cliff. First off, Cliff, they need to talk about her rap career face to face, because Cliff is not down for it. Also, he really don't too much like Mia. And so we get these two dejected people meeting each other. They're completely dejected. And now you want to drag these two sourpusses who clearly need individual time with you to talk, that you need to give them, Shauna. You drag these two sourpusses to a daggone industry party for the purpose of advancing your career. And it's absolutely a good move for your career, but it was a terrible move for your relationships. And so anyway, so the situation that I told you just happened. So Mia gets into a fight with some girl at the party, and Cliff gets drunk and leaves. They're all drunk at this point. And so by the time we get to the end of the episode, and I didn't just walk through all the whole big old spoiler, but anyway, it's whatever. I guess I'll put that in the notes. But by the time they get, you know, Shauna gets home. Actually, Shauna and Mia have a bigger blow up, and Mia ends up leaving. And we later find out that she leaves to go to wait for their plane for Sunday morning, because she's ready to go. And so she just goes to the hotel she goes to the airport because it doesn't close. Shauna goes back to Cliff's apartment, and Cliff is on live, and he's drunk, and he's just talking about her, just talking crazy about her on live. And the really awesome thing that I liked about that, this particular scene, is that he's on live and you see the comments of people who are following him telling him to make better choices. Don't do this. This isn't you. Never go live and drink, never drink and then go live, sort of thing, because clearly he's drunk. And so in this moment, it gets very tense between Cliff and Shauna. And he starts saying some stuff he really do not mean. Shauna's pretty sober at this point. Cliff is still gone and he's angry. Mind you, they're yelling and screaming at each other at this point. And then out comes Cliff's roommate, played by Kid Fury. And Kid Fury is like, all right, I'm about to call your mama, because you tripping. Yeah, I'm about to call your mama. And so they go back and forth. And then it appears as if Shauna and Cliff have broken up. In this drunken tirade that Cliff is on. And so she leaves, and then it's a very down moment, and Cliff's trying to play it off like he hard. And Kid Fury's character come back and say, I got your mama on the phone. She's stuttering. You might want to talk to her. It's hilarious. His deadpan delivery is hilarious. I've always found Kid Fury hilarious. I want to see more of him. I cannot wait to see more of him in this show. I want to see more of him just in general on what he's got to do, because what he has to offer, because he's just hilarious, naturally funny. And I want him to be well, but I want to keep supporting his work in this way. Whether or not the podcast comes back, I hope it does. But if it doesn't, I understand. But I still want to try to find ways to support him. Anyway, so the episode ends, and it ends thinking Shauna is a bad guy. She is. She is not attentive in her relationships, in her friend relationships, in her love relationships. Now, even though this episode ended with her and Mia kind of cuddling up and being close, I don't know if the show wants us to think that Cliff is just no good. He's just not right for her at the right time. I ended this show thinking Shauna needs to improve on her relationships, the relationships in her life. She needs to put more time in them while she's also being more attentive to her own needs and to her own goals. Is this life easy? No. Nobody ever said that managing good, healthy relationships while also pursuing your dreams is easy, but you got to put in the work. You absolutely have to put in the work if you want these things to thrive. And her relationship with Mia, not only her friendship, but her business relationship depends on her being attentive. And whether or not her relationship with Cliff survives, she still needs to learn a lesson here, which is you've got to be attentive. Also, long distance relationships are not for the weak. They are not for the weak. I used to know a married couple that had a long distance relationship, but they had been married for over 40 years. Or by the time I met them, they were in that 30 year mark. They had passed that 30 year mark and they were approaching the 40s. By the time I parted ways with them because I had moved, they were in the 40s, or either approaching their 40th year or in their 40s. Or had already achieved it and they were working on 41 or something like that. But that's the only couple I've ever known that has lived apart. And they had only been living apart for maybe a decade. But the lengths to which they made that work, they put in work to make that thing happen. They were both professors. And so obviously summers were together, all the major holidays were together, and quick weekends were together too. Like, that's how they made that thing work. But you got to put in the work. And I just don't understand. Like, I'm so disappointed in Shauna, because for somebody who like the two people that make sense, even in their brattiness, is Mia and Cliff. They make perfect sense in what they're wanting. Shauna was completely oblivious. Something happened to Mia. Something happened to her that was so unnerving that she literally left the lap of luxury that she was in. It had to have been bad. Cliff was a good sport, even though you knew he was dragging his behind. All of this is wild to me. All of it's wild to me. So I cannot wait for the next episode to see how they resolve it. Obviously, it's not going to get resolved pretty. Something's going to give. My prediction is that Shauna's going to lean into Mia and they're going to grow their relationship a little bit more effectively. And her and Cliff are going to drift even further apart. Because what do we know? That Shauna is jealous of one of their friends, one of their women friends, who is a lawyer too, and she's still hanging out with Cliff, and she believes that Cliff will gravitate toward her. And so she's a little bit insecure, which is all the more reason for them to have conversations, difficult conversations, but of course, no, they're not going to do that. So anyway, they're probably going to break up for a taste. Or this might be the beginning of their breakup, like for realsies. Like, there might be an apology and a half-hearted attempt to get back together. But by the end of the season, they're definitely going to be done. And we'll see what their friendship looks like in the second season. But like, yeah, her and Cliff, Shauna and Cliff, about to be over. And the road to success with Mia and Shauna is going to be bumpy. It's going to be bumpy to boot, for real. Anyway. So that's that show. If you're not watching Rap Shit, you should be watching Rap Shit. But anyway, but I'm going to go ahead and switch gears, and I'm going to start talking about, is there anything else I want to do? No. I want to start talking about Day Shift, which I think is actually an interesting film. And it tried really hard to show us glimpses of, I don't know who executive produced this. I'm going to look it up in a minute. I just watched the show cold. It had Jamie Foxx in it. I liked his last Netflix film. I know Netflix is just churning out a bunch of different stuff. Like, they've currently got a documentary out right now about that college football player from Notre Dame who was catfished in like the worst way possible. it's a two-part documentary on there. And I'm gonna watch it, but Netflix, it feels like sometimes Netflix is scraping at the bottom of the barrel, and they're just trying to put out so much content that they muddy the waters with subpar content. They've got good stuff, but they keep putting out some subpar things too. So I'm curious about this documentary and the light that it'll expose to this very... I remember that situation too. I felt like that catfish moment was Monte Teo. That was... I felt bad for him. I felt really bad for him because people are evil. That was like some old middle school stuff, but done in college too. Actually at the end of college, so like adult people were doing this. But anyway, I'll see if it's worth the time, but it's just Netflix is I don't know. But you know, this film that I'm about to talk about, Day Shift, is was pretty decent. So anyway, so in the next episode, or excuse me, in the next segment, I'm going to talk all about Netflix's Day Shift, starring Jamie Foxx and Megan Good, and that one man that I can't think of whose name I will look up when I do the cast. When I talk about the particulars in the next segment, I'll talk about his name. And yeah, so we'll go from there. All right. So next up, Day Shift. I'm distracted. Okay. But anyway, next up, Day Shift. Okay, so before I get into it, I forgot to mention two things that I wanted to watch, and a little bit of politics. So two things that I wanted to watch are Prey, and these are Hulu. So I think I'm gonna switch gears from Netflix for a second, and I'm gonna pop over to Hulu because Hulu has a film out called Prey. And it is like one of those precursor films to Predator. And anyway, it looks like it stars a bunch of indigenous Americans, which I think is pretty cool. I want to dig into it a little bit more. I only saw the trailer, but it looks pretty interesting, and I think I want to watch it. Now, mind you, I am not super into the Predator. Well, am I into the Predator franchise? I guess I kind of am. It gets a little kitschy after a minute. Like it's, what you call it? Not kitschy, but what's the, oh shucks. You know, those type of films that are like, really famous for being bad, and gimmicky, like cult classics. Like, I don't know. I want to watch it, 'cause it just, the representation alone makes me want to just go after it, because, you know, duh, I talk about it all the time. So anyway, I want to watch that. I may not review it, depending if it's terrible. I'm not gonna review it. I'll just mention it just briefly in the beginning of an episode talking about something else. But anyway, so I want to watch Prey. And then there's another film that just came out on Hulu that I'm going back and forth with, and I feel confident that some mental health organizations are going to release statements about them, just like they did 13 Reasons Why. Mental health organizations and stars and stuff are going to mention stuff about them, and they might come out against the film, because I've never seen a trailer before that had a disclaimer before you watched the trailer. Never. But there's a reason why. So I watched the trailer, and you know, trailers are 3 minutes long. So again, if there's a disclaimer before you actually get to the trailer, there's some heavy subject matter that is being depicted, or like heavy scenes that are being depicted in the trailer, which means that there are even heavier scenes being depicted, or concepts, themes being discussed, shown in the movie itself. And anyway, so I watched the trailer, and it was. So it's a dark comedy on Hulu. You've probably taken a peeky poo. And actually, if you are from the UK, I don't know. If you're outside of the United States, I don't know how the, outside of North America, for the most part, US and Canada, And even Mexico, the trailers are the same. It just, in Mexico, it's in a different, it's in Spanish for the most part. All of our, from what I remember watching TV in Canada, watching TV in Mexico, it's kind of the same. It's just in Mexico, it's a different language. But anyway, I don't know how they do it in countries not in North America. Not in North America, but it was one of the, it was one of my previews. And so maybe it just, maybe it does it, maybe it's not rocket science. It does it the same way for everybody. But anyway, it was one of the things that was recommended to me. And the film is called On the Count of Three. And it's two individuals, one of which, one is a black person and another, I think he looks like he's of color. I can't call his ethnicity rightly. I've seen him before in films. It feels like he's a person of color. He's either, I don't know. He's a person of color, I think. The actor is. But anyway, and they are both trying to take their own, end their own lives. And it's supposed to be a dark comedy. So I watched the trailer. I finished the trailer. I'm on the fence about whether I should watch it because I agree that art should reflect life in many ways, or not that it should 100% reflect life. I think aspects of our actual life should be on the big screen, should be in film and TV, just like they are depicted in songs, because it's life. It's real life, and you're going to resonate with someone. I just don't know how funny self-harm is. I know it's a show. I know we can make fun of everything. I know there are shock jocks and comics who can make you laugh about any old thing. I just don't know if I'm ready to laugh about life following two people who are trying to end theirs. Funny things that happen in the lives of two people who are trying to end it. Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. So anyway, I may watch it, I may not. I got through the first season of 13 Reasons Why, and that show was irresponsible. It was irresponsible the way it talked about it, because it was full of drama and it was very weird. And I know my niece, one of my nieces, who's a teenager now, she was, when 13 Reasons Why came out, she was not a teenager. She was like, I think she might have been 11 when 13 Reasons Why came out. And so by the time she started watching it, it was like on season 3 or something like that. So she was 13. And then she watched from the beginning all the way up. I believe if there are 3 seasons, my point is she began watching it. She was 13. She's 15 now. And there was something about the show that was alluring. And so I understand that maybe I'm not the target audience for this. Like, I wasn't the target audience for 13 Reasons Why. But I just, I don't know. Anyway, so I'll think about it. But anyway, if you watch it, you know, let me know how you feel about it. I might end up watching it myself. But it's just, right now, that you had to put a disclaimer in the trailer lets me know that more heavy things lie ahead in the film itself. So I don't know. Anyway, I might just watch, pray, and call it. But anyway, so those are the two things that I wanted to watch. And the political news is, outside of talking about U.S. politics, and then I'm going to slide over real quick to Baltimore politics right quick. So I know that there's, first off, I can't believe I haven't talked about this, but it is a big deal that the FBI raided Trump's place in Florida. It is a big deal that government agencies are subpoenaing some of his top leaders. It is a big deal. But the skeptic in me thinks that this is going to somehow or another, two things will happen. The skeptic in me thinks that they will find something on Trump and they will then be able to disqualify him for running in 2024. I don't know that that's the goal, but I think that is it's an outcome that can happen. But then there's another thing that if that should happen, well, there's three outcomes. So if that should happen, it feels like he could try to overturn it or and be successful, which would only, you know, make him even more difficult to beat. Or they get him, it sticks, he can't run anymore, but you've still given him tons of power to be able to unseat and disrupt the political harmony, if there is such a thing, on the local level. You might not be able to touch much on the national level, but creating havoc on the local level, which is what his organization slowly did leading up to what was that, 2016? No. Yes, 2016. So anyway, was it 2018? I can't remember. Anyway, I feel like it was 2016. Anyway, and then you've got people like, oh, can I talk about Bill Maher for a second? So was he a Republican that turned libertarian or something like that? Because the way that he moves and shakes, it feels very conservative, but he doesn't claim to be conservative. But it feels very conservative. It feels very not of the people. Very much of my own pocket, but playing like I'm for the people. Anyway, he's awful, as I'm sure a lot of people know. And also, he went on this long tirade, or I guess he wrote something. He either wrote something or went on a long tirade on his show, because I certainly don't watch it, about how the FBI just gave Trump all of this power and a great opportunity to run again in 2024. And even though that is an eventuality that I think, or it's possible that that could happen, because certainly I'm concerned if the charges don't stick, because regardless, he's a cult figure at this point, right? He's like a cult leader of he's like a cult leader of a headless group, right? I wouldn't say that his followers morphed into from the Tea Party, but it certainly jumped on that sentiment. And the scholars who are way more learned than I am, I'm not even that learned, but like way smarter than me, have already written about how Tea Party formed in many ways. Many of who were dejected in the Tea Party when Obama was first elected shifted and morphed and jumped into this thing, whatever this thing is, Trump's cult now. And so anyway, I just wonder, I guess this will be the election where we understand not the full reach, because we saw that in the election itself, but this will be the election where we learn how much more damage he can do. And damage is a really tough word, because there's an assumption there that everything was working fine before Trump came, and that's just simply not true. One of the things that you hear a lot with people who've voted Democrat for so many years but are dejected by it is this wild ultra-liberalism that is so politically correct that it's not correct anymore, that it loses touch with reality and that it loses touch with the people that it's trying to help. Meanwhile, the Republican base, for many, this two-party system doesn't work for many people, and I'm starting to believe it doesn't work for me, but libertarians just feel like Republicans that want to feel better about themselves, and I don't know anything about the Green Party, but it doesn't even feel viable. Because it's never been viable since I was a child, since before I was a child. And, you know, you just tend to feel dejected. Like, I know that there are other people who are trying to form another party. And so maybe having a four quartet party system or whatever you call it might be a better solution, to get different leaders with different viewpoints, probably all extreme in their own way, but a more centrist government, like other governments, might be what's in order for the United States, because this polarization is wild to me, because nobody's totally right. And meanwhile, back at the ranch, regular folks like myself are tripping because things are expensive. We're paying more for less, especially house, apartment, condo. We're paying more for less of it. I looked at a condo, hubby and I, not now, but in the future, in the not too distant future, are planning to purchase a condo. We don't want to do the house thing. And I'm going to talk about what I'm supposed to talk about. But anyway, so we looked at something and it's 1400 and some change square feet. Condo has a piece of the harbor, two bedroom, two bath, $600,000. For a piece of the view of the harbor, a piece of it. There's another condo on the market, which is right at the edge. Now, fair point, you can charge what you want when it's at the edge of this condominium. But it's $5.6 million. And no, before you ask, it's not the one where Kevin Spacey lives. Nope. This is some other probably rich ball player who got traded, or they're finding another condo on the other side of the harbor. It's somebody or some financier or somebody else rich who's got connections. $5.6 million. Here's the thing. It's six bedroom. Okay, fine. It's six bedroom. What is it? Five bedroom, six baths or something like that. I don't know if it's multi-layered. I don't know if it's got multiple levels. I know it's big, but okay, fair with the 5.6 million. Okay, fine. You made you a little mansion. People be doing that, but the two bedroom, two bath, five anything? No, I'm sorry, my bad. That was seven. That wasn't five. It was seven something. And you have a piece of the view of the harbor, and it was only 1,400 and some change square feet. I understand you could push it up there because it's the harbor, but seven something, five something was a one bedroom piece that had a one bedroom condo that had a piece of the harbor. Anyway, so my point is, you know, there's a lot of moving and shaking going on, and in local politics. So I'm just curious how things are going to shake out. I really don't know who's going to win in these primary. And well, the primaries have already begun to roll in, but I'm wondering what the heck the future is going to look like. What we know is that certain high profile candidates who were not on the Republican side, who were not backed by Trump, but Trump backed an opposing candidate, in the same party, the people who were not backed by Trump are beginning to lose. The most famous of which is Liz Cheney, which I don't have a lot of love for the Cheney family. Nobody should really, if you're thinking about the history of the family, but nevertheless, it's a big deal that she lost. Even though she's on her own person, fair point. Even though she's her own person, I just still always. Anyway, so there's that. And then you look on the local level and then you think here in Baltimore, well, the Trump effect really hasn't happened, except you have the Andy Harrises of the world who were very much dude got briefed about the January 6th before it happened. Like he knew what was about to go down. Now, what's going to happen to him? I don't know. But like he is moving and shaking in Maryland politics. So for anybody that thought that just because Maryland is blue, 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 doesn't mean that there's a whole lot of red, red, red pockets that are influential and can wreak havoc on the state, on the local economy, on the locals. And then you come all the way here, and I think I've talked about this before, but Marilyn Mosby lost her bid to become Baltimore State's attorney, and now it's at least the Democratic candidate for Baltimore State's attorney, and now it's Anthony Batts who's got it. And the way things go here in Baltimore, barring some devastating news that comes out for the Democrat, for any Democrat, barring some devastating news, they're going to win because Baltimore City is a blue city. Unfortunately, regardless of the candidate, in many cases, they got to be atrocious. So anyway, so we're going to have Anthony Batts come in, and I'm wondering what that will mean. Like, yes, he's Black Greek, but y'all, that don't hardly mean as much as we love it to mean. Like, it doesn't always mean what we want it to mean. And so I'm curious on how he's going to handle the squeegee. I'm curious how he and Brandon, Mayor Scott are gonna work together. And I'm curious on what this will mean for these squeegee kids, because, you know, if we didn't divest from out of school time programming, I don't say that we wouldn't have all of these issues that we've been having with tourists and tourists trying to attack, or people out of town are trying to attack, or getting into altercations with squeegee kids. But I'm certain we'd have a lot fewer of them. How about that? If there were more opportunities, out of school opportunities, job training opportunities, actual jobs in the city. Again, the governor of Maryland, current governor of Maryland, killed the red line, which would give more access to transportation, bring in more people into the city affordably, and bus them out affordably to go to jobs that are outside of the city when you don't have a car. He killed it. Lord knows when we'll get the opportunity again, but he killed it. So anyway, so that's politics, and that's all the stuff I wanted to say that I forgot to say in the intro. But anyway, let me move on. All right, so let me move on to the actual film itself. Okay, so now that I've thoroughly talked about everything else I wanted to talk about, let's get to the getting of the movie. Okay, so let me give you the particulars like I like to do. So the particulars are that Day Shift is a film which came out, which was released August 12th. So last Friday, by the time you're listening to this, by the time of release date of my episode, this movie was released on August 12th, which was last Friday. And it was directed by J.J. Perry. Don't know him. Distributed by Netflix. Budget was $100 million. But I don't know how much it grossed because I don't know how to find that information. So Netflix is always releasing what budgets are. But what we don't know is how much it earned back, or even how it earns it back. Is it through streams? I don't know. But what I do know is that when I watched this film, it was number one. It was number one out of 10. I don't know where it is right now, but when I watched it, it was the number one recommended movie, or the number one watched movie for the day out of 10. It was produced by Sean Reddick, Yvette Yates, Reddick, so related, Chad, and Jason Spitz. It stars, oh, well, hold on. Let me give you the reviews. Are the reviews out? Girl, are the reviews out? I'm not seeing them. Oh, my bad. So it's 6.8 out of 10 on IMDb. You know how I feel about IMDb. 59%, is that fresh at 59? I don't know that that's considered fresh, but here it is. It's not. okay. So 59% from on the tomato meter from 97 critics reviews, and 62%, so that's fresh. 62% is considered fresh from the audience score of 500 plus ratings. And so here's what the critics' consensus is. Game starts in an appealing, goofy, what? Game stars and an appealingly goofy premise aren't enough to make up for Day Shift's uninspired action comedy hijinks. Oof, that was harsh. That was harsh. But you gave it a 59. You didn't give it lower. I guess that's 59 is darn near terrible. I don't know. Oof, okay, well, let me read it again. Game stars, like game show stars, and an apparently goofy premise aren't enough to make up for Day Shift's uninspired action comedy hijinks. There are problems with this film, it's true, and I'll get into some of the problems. Overall, I don't think it was a bad film. I think it was a procedural dark sci-fi comedy, like something you would see on the Sci-Fi Channel. This movie would have been on the Sci-Fi Channel. Like Dave of the Dead or something like that, or the guy that used the chainsaw to hack up hack up zombies. It would be one of those cult classics that would show on the Sci-Fi Network. So I think to the blockbuster audience, no, this is not a blockbuster film, but I definitely think it has a niche audience that probably loved the heck out of this. Because look, 83% of Google users enjoyed this film, of which I am one. And so I can imagine of the people who cared to review this thing are all the same people who cared to watch it, who like this genre of film. It's a vampire film. And if you liked Buffy the Vampire Slayer, if you liked, if you enjoyed Joy watching the originals, if you enjoy watching Lord, if you enjoyed watching, He Did a Bad, Bad Thing. Wait, no, is that it? True Blood. Whatever the theme for True Blood is, I can't remember. If you enjoyed watching True Blood or you enjoy watching it now, there's no reason why you don't like this film. None at all. There's references to the old world. There's references to living day walking and stuff like that. Like if you enjoyed Blade, anybody that watched those type of films or those type of shows will enjoy this movie. It's not among the best of those, but it's not among the worst. It's middle of the road. So I think 83% of Google users like this because they also watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer, True Blood, which is not to disrespect either one of those series, those franchises. Those shows are different for their own in their own right, but they also have a through line of being, you know, having vampires as a concept, a high concept in there, or the main thrust of their whole doggone show and the killing of them, or the juxtaposition between a vampire having a normal life, being a vampire and trying to make it, living many, many years, and then also, you know, understanding how to, that there's a whole group of people who are regular humans who are trying to keep them at bay because the premise of all vampire shows, movies, vampire media is that vampires are superhuman and they have superhuman strength. And that superhuman strength unchecked can essentially help subjugate the entire planet. So vampires need to be checked. And so this is the premise of this film in a nutshell. But there are some underpinnings of this that are exclusive to the main star and why we're following him and this entire journey, why he's on this journey. And so, let me tell you the synopsis. So a hardworking dad out to provide for his daughter uses a boring pool cleaning job as a front for his real gig, hunting and killing vampires. All right, so this movie stars Jamie Foxx as the lead character, Bud Jablonski. Yeah. Bud Jablonski, we'll just call him Blood. I mean, Bud. Dave Franco, which is a better looking Franco, I think, is Seth. And that's the person I was talking about as Seth. Although, who knows? I hope he's not problematic. Probably is. But anyway, Jamie Foxx is a little bit problematic too sometimes. So Dave Franco as Seth. Carla Souza as Audrey, who we'll get into later. Snoop Dogg is in this as Big John Elliott, Megan Good as Jocelyn Jablonski, Bud's estranged wife, and some other people. I'll focus on Bud, Seth, and I'll reference Jocelyn, Big John, and Audrey. Okay, so here's the story. Oh wait, hold on. Did I give you more of the details? What are more details that I can share with you? I'll read another synopsis. An LA vampire hunter has a week to come up with the cash to pay for his kids' tuition and braces. Trying to make a living these days just might kill him. That was kind of corny. All right, what else do I want to tell you? I've already told you the release date. I already told you who made it, who starred in it. I told you the budget. Runtime is 114 minutes. Anything else I want to... No, I think that's it. So Bud. Bud is estranged from his wife, not Audrey. Estranged from his wife Jocelyn. Estranged from his wife Jocelyn for the reasons why you would be estranged from your spouse. They're just not getting along. And so they're doing the co-parenting thing. Now, she's still living in the home that they shared. He's moved out into a crummy apartment and he's driving around. We meet him driving around as a pool cleaner. We don't rightly know that he's estranged from his wife or he's separated from his wife, but we meet Bud driving around in an old beat up truck that is a pool service, has pool cleaning equipment in the back. He is driving around like he's a pool cleaner. I mean, it's the daytime and it's shot in the valley. Hold on. There's an important note about it being shot in the valley. And here's why that's important. Well, I don't know that it's important. And what the valley is depends. It might be Kissimmee Valley, where the only thing I know about Kissimmee Valley is that that's where a lot of former LA police officers retire and live in. And that is where the jury pool for the Rodney King verdict or the jury came from. The trial was moved out of LA and moved to Kissimmee Valley, which was where a lot of former police LAPD cops retired to. And part of the reason why they came to that, it was biased. It was a biased jury pool. And it's so interesting because I saw something in a documentary. This is just an aside. I saw something in a documentary about the LA riots, which included a comment about the Rodney King verdict and how that led to one of the largest riots, second to the Zoot Suit riots in LA. But this one particular juror who voted to acquit the officers did not see the racial implication of the case and of what the not guilty conviction might do, or the not guilty plea, not guilty verdict might do to the community. But in seeing everything that transpired and with the fullness of time and years behind him, he comes to understand how there was a lot of factors that led to the unrest that happened following the verdict. And in this revelation, he also realized he did like a 23andMe test, which a lot of white people were doing, and finding that they actually had a lot of brown leaves. This particular person who grew up his whole life being white, living and thinking that he was totally white, But looking at him, me looking at him, I thought he had a little color to him. Because he did. Actually, one of his family members was white passing. Which is a thing I know on TikTok. White passing is a discussion that is nuanced to a lot of folks. But in the Black community, white passing is violence. White passing is totally denying, deceptively denying, or being deceptive to the public, to everyone, hiding your Black ethnicity because it is a negative, full stop. You cannot talk about white passing without acknowledging that. The origin of that word comes from Black people who were light-skinned enough, light in complexion enough, to fool white people into thinking they were white. And there's a whole lot of people in some of these families that, shoot, we're learning even more. Remember the dude from True Blood? What was that man's name? Not Holt. The big guy with the dark hair that turned into a wolf, his grandfather was a Black man. Like, whole generations of white people walking around not knowing, and some of whom have problematic views about Black people, not knowing that Blackness is a part of their DNA. But anyway, and so I say all of this to say, I think it was important for Jamie who, and I don't know that this is his film. I know he's the star of it, but I don't see him as being an executive producer or anything like that. But I think it was important to Jamie. Maybe it was important for him for this thing to be set in Kissimmee Valley and for there to be vampires hiding out in Kissimmee Valley as a nod to. And maybe I'm reaching with this. Maybe I'm reaching. But it being set in Kissimmee Valley and Kissimmee Valley being a total nothing but vampires living out here in Kissimmee Valley, a nod to 94, a nod to the, I don't know, are the vampires analogous with retired cops who might have made life hell for Black and brown people in LA? I don't know. It just feels like maybe. And then Bud is driving around in this truck, in this beat up truck, and he's got LA tunes coming out, or what we feel like is an LA sound coming out in terms of hip hop coming out the speakers. It's a vibe. The coloring of the footage is very golden, orangey color. That's how you shoot films taken in California. Very orangey, very, very yellowy orangey to represent how sunny and hot it is there. And again, when you're on the East Coast, you use a lot of blues. Even when it's hot, it's a sizzling blue, blue white that you use there, just because it's super sunny out over here too. But when you're on the East Coast, it's just a different vibe. When you're shooting in New York, it's blue and white. When you're shooting in LA, and California proper, or California, the state, it's yellow orange. It's just a technique that a lot of photographers use, or videographers use. Anyhow, so he's going whoop, 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 whoop. He ends up at this house and he goes in. I can't remember I think he lets himself in. And it's dark and you're thinking, oh boy, here comes some ominous stuff. And sure to point, some ominous stuff do happen. He meets this old lady who appears to be just a regular old lady, but turns out she's a vampire. And so, you know, fighting ensues and biting and stuff and blah, 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 blah. And he's getting his tail beat, but he's giving as good as he's getting. And tripwire and he beheads the vampire, this older vampire. But that's not enough. He really wants to squish it. No, actually, the trip, he beheads the vampire, who's an old woman at this point,
And he also beheads another vampire that was there trying to protect her. And he's a hunter. So not only does he behead them, because apparently beheading them with silver wire will really kill them, give them the true death. But he also then collects their teeth, their fangs, as a way to make money. And the older the fangs, the older the vampire, the older looking the fangs are, which the more money the fangs will fetch. And the reason why the money is important is because we learn why it's important for Jamie or for Bud to do this work is because he's estranged from his wife. He's separated, living in another space. She's living with their child in their old home, and the child needs braces and tuition for school. And so Jamie's got to do what he's got to do. He doesn't have a regular job, so he's got to do what he's got to do to make this money. So his incentive for going out and vampire hunting is to get this guap for his daughter. And in this moment, so when he meets up with Jocelyn, his wife that he separated from, she lets him know, hey, listen, we need all this money. And oh, by the way, you're not really pulling through with the pool cleaning business. And oh, by the way, we might move. And so here comes the plot device. Jamie doesn't want his family broken up. He actually wants to get back together with Jocelyn and be one big happy family with their daughter. Jocelyn is like, you need to provide for me, Negro. And if I can't get satisfaction from you and support for our daughter here and go into this expensive old school, we got to go somewhere else, baby. We're going to move closer to my family, put her in public school, so at least she can have a support system here and in that new space, and that I can provide for her in the way that she needs to be provided for. So Jamie's like, nah, give me the weekend. I'm going to make this money. And if you give me the weekend and I come up with the money, will you stay? And Jocelyn agrees. Now, my thinking is it cannot be that simple, because if you can come up with, I think it's like $5,000 or something like that. If you could come up with $5,000 in a weekend, you could have came up with that money weeks ago. So the fact that you are now doing this over the weekend does not impress me much. But for the sake of this film, we go keep it pushing. But it's not lost on me how he could have, if he didn't have a fire under his tail before now. We are estranged for a reason. We are separated for a reason. Jocelyn tells him, you lied to me. And what we know is, what we find out pretty quickly is she really do think he's a pool cleaner, but that he be lying about other things. And some of the other things that she think he lying about is probably cheating, right? So whatever, this is what advances the plot. He got to come up with this money in a weekend, but it's not lost on me. Negro, come up with this money. Thank you so much. I'm still moving. We're still moving. Me and your child, we're still moving. You're going to have to figure it out, because I had to threaten you with moving to come up with this money. No, thanks. I'm not going to keep doing that, but whatever. It's a movie. So we move on. And so now we get, now we see that Jamie has a big purpose. He's got to make a lot of money in a short amount of time, and he's going to do it through vampire hunting. And in order to make some real money through vampire hunting, he's got to join this union of vampire hunters. And so enter Snoop Dogg, who plays, what's that man's name? Why don't you have Snoop Dogg here? Oh, you don't have him listed at all. He's listed. Big John Elliott. So enter Big John Elliott. Snoop Dogg is Big John Elliott. So anyway, Big John Elliott comes and he vouches for him in front of this, the guy who's the union head. And Bud has been, we learned that Bud has been kicked out of the union because he just will not follow union rules. He think he too good for him. He knows better than what the union has come through. And so he was originally kicked out of the union because he just could not abide by the rules. But the union leader is going to give him one more chance. Excuse me. In honor of Big John Elliott. Because of his respect for Big John Elliott. So Jamie's in the union. He's finally going to be able to make some real money off of hunting these vampires. But the catch is he has a union rep with him to play by the rules. Because again, he was not playing by the rules before. And so the union boss is determined to make him play ball now. So enter Dave Franco as Seth. So Seth is meant to follow him all weekend and make sure that he, Bud, plays by the rules. Now, let me pause here and say that the big bad in this film is played by Carla Souza. Carla plays Audrey. Audrey is a real estate agent by day, but a awesome possum, big time vampire chief at night. And so her big scheme is to find a way to make it okay for vampires to be daywalkers. And in fact, she's a daywalker. Now, mind you, she's walking under an umbrella during the day. But that's to protect her skin because she's still a vampire. And if she's in direct sun, she's taking some sort of potion that makes her able to walk in the day. But she cannot walk in the day without an umbrella because direct sunlight will kill her. Now, what we don't get a full explanation of is to how they came across. She and her crew came across this magic elixir that gave them this ability. But we know it exists. And so that's it's a plot hole that I'm sure critics were like, what? What of the many plot holes where the critics were like, excuse me, I don't get this. Because certainly it wasn't explained it wasn't explained beyond what I just shared with you. And so, and the reason why Audrey and Bud are on a path, a collision course, is because the old woman vampire that Bud killed in the beginning was actually Audrey's daughter. And we learn more about that, the why of that later. But anyway, and so her daughter's been killed and she wants to kill the person who killed him, which is Bud. And so they're on a collision course. So anyway, so Bud and Seth go out hunting. And hilarity ensues, and it's as you expect it to be. It was not a great pairing in the beginning. Bud is chafing against Seth, and Seth is like, oh, why won't you play ball? And lots of blue, blue, blue. There are a couple of jokes about Seth being a pencil pusher and all of that stuff. And blah, blah, blue. Let's cut to it. Oh, and by the way, I do want to say really quickly, Zion Brodnax, cute little girl, plays Paige Jablowski, which is Bud and Jocelyn's daughter. She's just the cutest thing. I just had to mention her. Anyway, vampire hunting ensues, and a bunch of different things happen, and let me just cut to it. There's a moment where Bud puts Seth in a precarious situation and Seth ends up being bitten, being taken, bitten, and turned. But Seth being turned is actually a plus for Bud because now he's got someone on his side with equal superhuman strength that can go and attack the queen vampire and her troop. Now let me pause here and just say that by the point of this film where Seth has been captured and turned, Audrey has kidnapped Jocelyn and Paige. Jocelyn and Paige, Bud's family. And so it is advantageous for Seth to have been turned at this point. And so Seth is transitioning and Bud is trying to use him as best as he can. He also runs into a familiar in his building who he actually thought was a familiar. And you guys know, if you watch vampire films, you know, or vampire media, you know that familiars are the people, the humans who are friends to the vampires that do all their bidding in the daytime. But in actuality, this is a vampire that Audrey has turned to spy on to spy on Bud, she's also given this vampire that elixir that allows her to move freely in the daytime as long as she's in the shade. So anyway, blah, blah, blue. So, but this woman has been turned against her will, and so she wants to go against Audrey. So this woman teams up with Seth and Bud to help go get Bud's family back, but then also to end Audrey's reign. And so, crash course to the end. There's a showdown between Bud and Audrey and the rest of her minions with Seth and the other lady that was turned. What's this woman's name? I don't remember. Oh, Heather. I think it's Natasha Liu Bordizzo as Heather. Anyway, so Seth and Heather, I believe, are on Bud's crew. And so, you know, they play linebackers to Bud's quarterback and Bud and allow him to get into the spot where Audra has placed his wife and child. Now, Audra's plan is to turn Jocelyn, to turn Paige, Bud and Jocelyn's daughter, so that Paige can take the life of her mother in front of Bud. So now Paige is internally a vampire. And you know, which is a big no-no, right? Because in vampire lore, isn't it frowned upon to turn a child? But whatever, this woman don't care. So anyway, blah, blah, blue. We come to the showdown and Audrey is like, you know why I'm doing this? You know why I'm going after your family? Because that vampire you killed was actually my daughter. By the time this was my daughter before I was turned, this was my daughter. And then I was turned and I got separated from her in some like war. I think it was the Spanish-American War or something like that. Anyway, and so she was separated from her daughter. And by the time she found her, her daughter was an old woman, but she turned her anyway. And so you killed my daughter and now I'm going to turn your daughter and make your daughter kill your wife. And so blah, 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 blue. No, you're not. Blah, to the blah, 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 blue. And at the end of the day, Bud uses the same trick on Audra that he used in the very beginning. It's the very thin silver wire that beheads Audra, the queen pin, and all of her other minions are dead because Seth and Heather have killed them, have overpowered them, killed them. Certainly Bud has done his fair share of taking them out. And now he's back with Jocelyn and Paige, one big happy family. Jocelyn is staying because Jocelyn recognizes now through the course before she was taken. They had a heart-to-heart moment, which was a weird time to do it, but they had a heart-to-heart moment, and Bud confesses to Jocelyn that he's a vampire hunter. She didn't believe it, but then she realized she was being taken by vampires, and so that's what he had been hiding from her this whole time. And so by the end of the movie, Bud agrees that he's never going to hide anything from Jocelyn again. He's going to tell her the truth, and we get the sense that they're going to be one big happy vampire hunting family at the end. So that's the movie. And it's not a bad movie. Like I say, from my perspective, and I don't mean to be disrespectful, but if you watch True Blood, and I watched almost every season of True Blood, except when Eric got that disease. And then I just stopped watching it because I'm like, all right, y'all been jumped the shark on this show. But if you watch True Blood and enjoyed it, if you watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer and enjoyed it, if you watched Originals, I don't even know how the Originals does, but if you watched Buffy or True Blood, you will enjoy this film. It's not it's not the top of the bunch. It's not the bottom of the barrel either. It's right in the middle. I don't think it warrants the 59% not fresh from Rotten Tomatoes, but I do from the critics, but I do think it's like a 70. Like a 79, 80. It's not the best movie, but it's not the worst either. And it's better than just okay, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it was funny. I think it was something to watch on a Saturday night when you're watching a marathon, a vampire movie marathon. I don't think it's not a movie you should take super seriously. It's purely entertainment, and it's something you put on when you're watching a movie-thon. And so, yeah, add this one to your collection. Add it to your Halloween collection. It's not super scary, but it'll be a good warm-up. How about that? If you're going to do a scary movie-thon like one of my old acquaintances from a place I used to work, every year he and his husband do a scary movie-thon. And this could be a warm-up. Now, they don't do warm-ups. They go all in, and they go hard on those scary movies. They go real hard. But yeah, if you wanna start up with a warm-up, let this be a good warm-up. So yeah. Anyway, that's really the movie. Like I said, I may watch On the Count of Three, maybe, but I will definitely watch Prey. And when I watch Prey, well, if it's good, I'll review it. If it's not, I'll watch something else. Also, you need to be watching Rap Shit. You need to be watching Rap Shit, because I'm quite sure this finale that we're barreling toward is going to be something serious. So watch it so that you can get caught up, because it's good. It's good TV. It's good TV, in my opinion. Anyway, that's it for now. I have talked enough. Have a wonderful day. Take care of yourself. Enjoy this weather. Enjoy the last days of summer, because we're about to barrel into the fall before you know it. It's already getting cooler in the summertime, in the nights. Is that happening for y'all? Because certainly over here in Maryland, it's getting cooler at nights. Now, mind you, it has been raining a lot, because we're in our what you call it, flash flood season for us. But yeah, just, you know, maybe it's going to get hot. I don't know. It just feels like it's getting cooler at night these days, which means fall is right around the corner. And I read in the Farmer's Almanac that we are in for a very harsh winter. Not looking forward to that. But anyway, so enjoy these warm days and these relatively warm nights, because it's middle August. We're not far from September. So anyway, that is if you're on the Northern Hemisphere. If you're on the Southern Hemisphere, you're about to go into your summer. So you're coming out of your winter and you're about to go into your summer. So enjoy either way. All right, y'all, take care of yourself. Love on yourself. Love yourself best. And then share that love with someone else. Take care of your friendships. Your friendships really need maintenance. Everybody's friendships need maintenance, but really make sure that you're supporting the people and you're cultivating those relationships, and you're honoring the friends that you have in your life, because they don't have to be there, y'all. So honor those friendships. Treat them nice. All right, that's it for now. Until next time, take care.